This is the Our Voices Matter project, and this is a supplementary interview with Ruth Dory. I am Anna Kwan interviewing Ruth. It's September the 16th, and we're conducting this interview at the Bloomfield Center in Halifax. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, Anna.
Thanks for coming in again.
Oh, you're welcome.
After our last interview, I realized that I hadn't asked you about your ethnic background. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, my father is a Native man. He doesn't have the card, but he's eligible to get the card. He just didn't go get the card.
Okay.
And I don't know if I would be eligible or not. And my mom is also part Native, they don't have any cards on that side of the family.
Right.
Which is a Native card, status card.
Right.
And so I was brought up by the white side of my family, and there wasn't any emphasis on that. It was rather de-emphasized. They just didn't talk about it at all. Mm-hmm. So it took me a while to realize that I was of a Native heritage.
Right.
When I had my first child, I looked at him and he looked like a fellow that was on TV. He played a Chinese character. And I looked at my baby and I said, "My baby is Chinese. Do you think they gave me the wrong one?" And I didn't really think about it at all until I was like, I was so concerned because I said, "They've given me the wrong child." And after a while, I'm thinking, you know, if my father is a Native person, am I not a Native person too? And I was like, I can't believe it. This child looks so Native. But I thought Chinese at first because it's somewhat the light. Yeah. Well, anyway.
So how old were you when you knew that your father was Native?
I had heard it off and on that Indian guy that your mother married or something like that. They had no respect for him at all. And so I was like, but I didn't even think about it. I was running around playing. I didn't care.
Okay. So when you were growing up, it sounds like your dad, a reputation did he have with your family, I guess?
They thought he was no darn good. He was a no darn good Indian, and he had done this thing and that thing, and he wasn't standing by his family, and he was no darn good.
Right. And when did you... So it was when you had your child that you kind of thought of yourself as maybe being Native?
I still didn't think of myself as Native for quite a while after that, because I hadn't been around any Native people.
Mm. So when was it that you began to see that as part of you?
Well, I went to Winnipeg to work, and there were a large population of Native people, and they were in very sad condition. And I started thinking, you know, I'm Native, and these people are in such bad and shameful condition. I was ashamed of my Native part because they were in alcoholic states and all kind of sad conditions. And I was ashamed. Then I was angry because they shouldn't have been that way, and I started to identify with their plight. And so I started meeting the Native people there, but they were like a different group of Native people, so I didn't know how well we would understand each other. So we just had kind of like a little friendships.
Yeah, okay. So what role do you think discovering you were a Native person or beginning to identify as a Native person, what role has that had in your mental health or recovery?
Well, it's very confusing to be of two races. I found it difficult at first because I wanted to... when I started thinking of myself as a Native person, I started rejecting my white part and saying, "Oh, those are the people who came and took away the land from the Native people, and they're evil." And then I was in a quite a mixed up state for a while, and then I said, I talked to some other mixed race people, and they said, it's a gift from God that we are mixed race, and we have a foot in two different worlds, and we can have a chance to bring, you know, togetherness to the world. And I thought that was really helpful. Mm-hmm. And then I went and studied with a Native woman. Her name is Eileen Brooks, and she's well known in the community. She's a very nice lady. And she took me on a fast and helped me to make a pipe, which is very important. Which I haven't got the complete story of what the pipe means. But that's probably going to come in time.
So when was it that you started studying with this Eileen Brooks?
I think it was 2001, and she was in town then working, and so we could see each other a lot, and now mm-hmm. she's not in town anymore, so I don't see her very often.
Right.
She's a really nice lady.
So when you mentioned the pipe, Is it a special job to prepare the pipe, or can you tell me about that?
The head of the pipe is made by a Native artisan, but everybody prepares their own stem, which they give you, well, you choose a piece of wood and you carve it, and it's a certain kind of wood that you put a wire down through it, and it has a soft spot in the middle, and that makes a hole all the way through, so that you can smoke your pipe after. So we all went on it was only a couple of us actually at that particular fast, and we just, that's one of our tasks, and there was prayers we had to do, and some of it we had to not speak for 24 hours, and some mostly prayer tasks and things.
Prayer
tasks. We had to make tasks. Little prayer ties, put tobacco in them because tobacco is sacred, and then you pray over the little one, and then you hang them in the tree.
Okay. So when you say a prayer tie, is that?
Yeah, it's a little red piece of cloth that's tied up, and tobacco's inside of it.
Okay. So do you have a special title? I think you mentioned something the other day about a smoke something.
Oh, yeah, the smoke in... I was called Fire Woman at first because I was helping to keep the fire, and I laid down to sleep, and the fire yelled at me, wake up, and I my eyes were as big as saucers because you don't expect the fire to talk to you. So I told the other fire keeper what had happened, and then I came out, and everybody's going, you're the fire woman. I was like, I don't know what happened. I thought I was hallucinating. Apparently it's not looked at the same way in the Native culture. If you hear something, they don't just say, you're hallucinating. They say, oh, tell us about it. What was the content? And you're more respected because of that kind of thing.
Has knowing that you are a Native person and identifying with that and the practices of Native spirituality, has that had any effect on your recovery or your mental health?
Well, it has had an effect both ways because it's confusing, and I wasn't brought up that way, and sometimes I don't know what they're talking about, and I feel stupid sometimes because I think, oh, I should understand this, but I was in the church and the white community for years, and it's hard to understand what they're saying sometimes.
Can I go back a bit and ask you about your relationship with your father?
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about your relationship with him now and how you felt about him in the past before you knew him?
Well, I could remember him because I was three and a half or something when he had left the family, and he was very kind to me, very, very good. And I always, like little girls do, I always worship my dad, and I think a lot of girls do that. And I can remember the last, before, just before he left, me and my brother were driving in the truck with him, and we both learned to whistle that day, that the last day that we saw him for a really long time. And that was a memory that stuck in my mind a lot. And he was always so good. And now, well, it was, 1997, I was in a pretty depressed state, and I thought I was going to do away with myself, so I said, well, I'm going to find my father before I do that. And I was proactive. I called up and I said, can I come in? I said to his wife at that time, I said, I'm his daughter. I'd like to see him. And she said, you come on over. But she did not know he had any children except by his second wife. And we were by the first wife. So she did not have any knowledge that he had five children by this woman. So when I got there, she was pretty surprised. And we hit it off right away. And he was like, are you my dad? I said, and he says, I think so. And it was kind of a little funny and surprising. But it didn't go totally smoothly because of all the feelings of anger. He left me when I was little, and he's a bad person to do that. So it was painful. And, well, I went out there, and then after a while, I couldn't go there sometimes because of these feelings of abandonment. And eventually I worked it out with my therapist, and I got so I could go there. And now we're going to Costco this weekend or whatever, you know. And we go for drives a lot, and we have a pretty good time. So it's nice.
And when you were growing up and your dad wasn't around, did you have those feelings of anger and abandonment then as well?
Well, I didn't know why he didn't get in contact with me, because I knew that he loved me. And so I would write these letters and send them in the mail. If I didn't know his address, I'd just go Halifax and send it to Halifax, because I lived in Shelburne County, excuse me. And they would come back, address unknown, and I was like a kick in the head or something every time they'd come back. I'm sort of upset today that the people I was living with didn't help me to get the letter through, because they were kind of like, oh yeah, it'll come back because you don't know the address, and they didn't help me get the address. So I'm a little bit ticked off about that now. So.
Maybe we can talk a bit about education and the role it's had in your life. Tell me, what was the sort of the highest level of education that you got?
I've taken some courses at three different universities, but I can't remember what one of them is. It's a Christian university, and I took ancient Hebrew, classical Hebrew, for 2 years, and I took a course on the history of Christianity, and I was about to take one called hermeneutics when I moved from there. So, but that's the interpretation of scripture. And the other ones, I took a computer course at the University of Winnipeg, and I took at the University of Manitoba, I took, what's that called, medical terminology, because to work in a hospital you have to have that. So. And I have a canning course from community college here in Nova Scotia, and I also have a trade in carpentry. I took a year and a half at vocational school, and I have 3,000 hours. You require 8,000 hours of work to become a carpenter, so I'm up to 3,000, and I don't think I'm going to get the rest, because I'm getting a little long in the tooth for that sort of thing. And I guess I actually didn't finish school, and after my children were born, I took the GED, and I did pretty good at that. So that's how I got my high school.
So you didn't finish high school at first?
Yeah.
Okay. How old were you when you had your first child?
I was 18.
So were you in high school at the time and had...
I had quit.
Okay. Because
I was like, oh, I wanted to study, and it was so much... It seemed like nobody was very studious, and I said, I can't study here. And I got upset about it, and I said, I'm not coming back, so...
It sounds like education is something that's been an interest of yours. Has it helped you in any way, your mental health or your recovery, to learn new things?
Oh, definitely, because I find when I'm not reaching for the next level, I'm going down in mood, and if I haven't got something to keep my mind, I get really depressed. So if I'm busy in learning, I'm usually much more able to cope with things.
You told me recently that you had a little trouble getting into community college.
Yeah. Well, there's a program that my social worker made me aware of, I had to have a medical paper filled out, and the doctor said that I didn't have a disability and she wasn't going to fill it out, so I didn't get it filled out, and now I'm wondering if I'm going to even have a lot of difficulty continuing my disability check, because I have to have a doctor to say there's something wrong with me, and she's not going to do it, so she doesn't know my case that well. So.
Wow. That's a big thing. Is how long have you been on disability?
Since 1998, and I've been off it for a short period, but I went back to work and I didn't do all that well, because when I'm working full time, I can't keep my nerves good. They start getting shattered, so I didn't do well. The first few days were all right, but then it got worse and worse. So. Mm-hmm.
What are the things that keep you feeling well?
If I have contact with a nice person that we can understand each other and have some sympathy or empathy with each other, and like a two-way street of giving. And sometimes it's very difficult to find a person who's willing to put the effort and time into a relationship. So it's a bit difficult. Well, then there's also getting out and going on the buses and meeting casual acquaintances on the buses and having, you know, we go to, not that many coffee shops, but sometimes we go for a hamburger or something, and that's fun.
Okay. is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we didn't cover in your interview last time?
I think it was almost completely thorough.
Okay.
You never know.
Okay.
Oh, well. There is still a big problem with relationships in my family that we're not all that close. And I think it's sort of because there was a lot of poverty and upset when we were little. We didn't get our relationships going the way that they might have. We're not as close as some other families may be. So, but we've got to work on these things, I guess.
And the thought went out of my mind. Relationships of an intimate nature. Do they play any part in your health?
Well, I find them very difficult because I've allowed myself to be used by a lot of men, and maybe I had a lot of intimate relationships that I probably shouldn't have because I didn't know the person well, and they're like, oh, come on, let's have an intimate relationship, and I'm like, well, I don't know, but then I would jump right into it, and I think it might have... I decided at one point I was going to be celibate until I had a really good reason to be different. And that was the first time I felt I had any power in relationships, because I learned to say no at that time. Before, it was, I want to have an intimate relationship with you, and I would say yes whether I really wanted it or not. So.
When was it that you came to that decision?
Well, that's been probably in the 90s sometime. So.
And what was it that led you to make that decision, or to be able to make that decision?
I was doing a lot of therapy, and it was important that I did what was good for me instead of what was good for somebody else. And I started thinking of myself as an important person in my own life. I never felt that way. I still sometimes don't feel like an important person in my own life. And that's a kind of funny thing to say, I guess, but I guess that's how I'd say.
Can you tell me about therapy and the role that it's had in your life?
I had the most wonderful, wonderful therapist, and she worked at Drug Dependency, and I went there, and she was just so sweet, so gentle. But if I knocked on her door, whatever she was doing, she said, "I have to get this finished, but you wait out there, and I'll get you." And it was like I could go there anytime, and then she was like a mama. She was like a mama. And she was but a kind and loving mama that never disciplined you. So I got the best of everything anyway. So she was a really sweet person. And
so how long did you have her?
I think about therapist? 5 years or something like that. She was, and then she moved away, and it was kind of a wrench. So, but, you know, these things happen.
Have there been other therapists or types of therapy that have worked well for you?
Well, I did that, what's it called, cognitive something or other, and that, like if you have a thought, oh, I'm a stupid person or something, you learn to refute that and say, you know, I'm very intelligent, and this is the reason that I say that, and you give yourself reasons. I went to school and I passed and this and that, and when there's a problem, I know how to solve it and things like that. You give yourself a different way of looking at yourself.
That was pretty good. Cognitive behavioral therapy?
I'm not sure exactly what it's called, but something like that.
Okay. And how long did you go through that?
I went 3 times. It was fast, fast, fast. It was like, he says, go home and write down what you're thinking that's making you feel depressed. And I said, well, I'm not thinking anything that... And then when I got home and I started writing down what I was thinking, I saw what I was thinking, that I had depressive thoughts that made things worse. And then the next time I went back, he says, now let's talk about these and see if we can change them. And then the third time I went back, it was really amazing. It's very fast. Once you get it, it's like really fast.
Do you still practice it today?
Yeah, and I still get these thoughts, and I don't know, like I'm like, oh, I feel terrible, I must be stupid, whatever. Yeah. And then you go, you know, everybody has this sort of feeling, and the reason that I shouldn't feel this way is whatever. It pulls you out of a lot of messes when you can think 2 or 3 different ways instead of one.
And my last question, I guess, would be, how do you feel today about your recovery or where you are in your recovery?
Well, I think I'm pretty good. I want to go to work, but that may not be possible right now because I have diabetes quite bad, and I have fibromyalgia, and I do still have a lot of anxiety, so I'm going to work on that and see. I feel a bit discouraged on that front, but going to try. So,
yeah,
not too bad.
Well, thank you. Really appreciate you telling me your story and the second part of it even again. So, yeah, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Anna.
Okay.
It's been great.
Okay.